And then we just forum.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Because Gina and who else?
Did you want
can't make it. And Joe has not been, so this is where we're at.
I missed the last two meetings. I was out of town. I've been all over the place. I've been Boston, New York, Washington, multiple times.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Look at you.
Crazy summer.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds exciting.
Well, sounds interesting.
I know. Some fun, some work. So little mixture. Yeah.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hi.
Well, everybody's got in and settled, and I'm going to start off right away with a welcome and initiating the meeting, but with a note that Dennis needs to leave at 5, so we're going to move his report up before that, and I need to leave at 6 exactly. So while we've got that, we're going to just be efficient and move through all the pieces, if that's okay with everybody. Okie doke.
Efficient sounds great.
What?
Efficient sounds
all right,
fabulous.
So we're going to start right off by looking at the minutes. And I know we have our minute takers and our minute watchers, so we can look at them and make an amendment. Yes, amendments if you want, and a proposal to adopt.
You just gave me a look.
I'm not being efficient now, but in many of the groups I'm a part of, you don't have to be there to move to move acceptance of the minutes.
Like, how do you know that's what happened in the meeting if you weren't there?
What?
It doesn't sound appropriate.
Yeah, I think
it may not be appropriate.
Before.
I just don't know whether it's a rule that you have to do that or not, I think. Anyway, well, I'll stop that.
I'll move accept the minutes.
Okay.
Last meeting.
Seconded.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the last meeting as proposed, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? It passes. So, public forum.
Public. Here.
Okay, Jules, you got 5. You want to take it?
I don't even need that many because we've got to get going.
Okay.
Well, you know about Greta and the climate change is real now. That just got a monkey wrench. Everything that exists. And I'm impartial. I studied this. I'm transitions. And let's see, they even went so far as to the actual Climate and Energy Action Plan. Read on one of these pages. It says, ensure all city departments educate their staff members about the climate and energy action plan. That doesn't say anything. Consider climate change in all city council policy, budgetary, or legislative decisions. And as part of the council document template. Well, one of the simple things to do to get started is to count the carbons for every project that you're putting forward. Not how you got here or you, just for the projects. And a simple way to do that, you can learn to do all this. Count the carbons. Well, the average American, and we're average, Ashland's average, I'm sorry, yeah, energy-wise, it's 17 tons, it sounds like a lot, 17 tons of carbons per man, woman, and child. That's an average. So whenever you build something, you find out how many people are going to live there. A household is, what, 1.5 or 2 in Ashland. I'm not counting the cars, because the cars, for multiple, they don't have to be electric. But for houses coming up in the state, as California did in 14, they have to be EV-ready, charger ready. We don't have that yet here in Oregon, but they're working on it. So the cars, there was a third. Everybody's energy, which is carbons, because the carbons keep going up. This is like ridiculous. It's not going to happen. Like the planning commission said, we're not going to count our carbons. No way! Because it's just... So that's a good thing to do. Somebody said, I got the college degree and I studied so hard and everything, the future I planned for no longer exists. So the city council, the plan was, the climate and energy action plan was made into an ordinance about a month or two ago. So it can be changed. It's a living document. Thank you. So just learning to count the carbons. Don't be afraid.
Thank you. Got it. Thanks, Drew. Any other? None? Okay, we're going to look at the update to the city council. So that's where we give our report in November. Who did it last time?
I don't remember.
I think you did.
I thought you did. I feel like it was you.
Yeah, it was you.
Yes, okay. Well, that was significant.
The only time I get to heckle you.
Okay. That's another good reason. Is someone?
Oh, right.
No, I think you did do it once.
Yes,
me and Erica
did it together. You did. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
You wanted a break for a year.
Yeah, well, for a year.
Well, maybe you two could do it this year. Are there any? Who wants to volunteer?
You want to volunteer with me?
With you?
Yeah.
I'll do it with you.
Okay.
I won't do it alone.
That's how touch and go there. With you?
I could have gone in either direction.
Right. We could have been.
With you? Never mind.
Never mind. That's right. Okay.
Oh, wait. I need to double. When is it?
Yes. That's a good question.
Oh, didn't I write it in here?
You did. You said November 5th.
Is that a Wednesday?
Yes. No, it's a Tuesday.
Thursday.
Yeah.
It's a Tuesday evening. Yeah, that is
fine. And it's usually at the front of the agenda, so like 7:30-ish.
Yeah, we don't make
between
it
seven
around
and seven. All. Yeah. Okay. And what shall we put on the report?
Say what?
What would you like to include? So here's what we've done in the past, and we did not do Affordable Housing Trust Fund. This year, we did do CDBG, and we did do social service
grants. Social services. Those are the two that I think would be mentioned.
Which two?
Social service.
Social service grant.
Yeah.
And CDBG.
Do you want to talk about the housing trust?
Well, we'll need to talk about it because we'll be issuing the RFP in January. So that could be at the end for, like, what we're gearing up to do. Or did you have something else in mind?
Well, any chance you have of underscoring the importance of continuation, things are going to be challenging. So, I mean, I would spend a little time making the case for it every chance I have.
Okay.
Case for?
The housing.
The housing trust fund.
Yes. So, that it continue to have money put into it.
So from the marijuana.
Yeah, I'm just remembering whether we did the rent forum before or after. We did it before we made the present. Did we do the rent forum? In any case, we should put the rent forum as one of the pieces that would.
This year's rent forum.
Because we will have done it. We will have done that one before we do that in October, and we're talking November 5th.
And that's under education and outreach. Mm-hmm. So we did not, this came before the rent forum that we did last year, so we can talk about both if you wanted.
I guess.
The newest rent forums.
The newest one will be the most current, but yes.
Okay. Is there anything under homeless goals?
About the shelter update with the building,
building that they're using on.
Well, were we, was this group really involved in that?
We just got that from Aura.
Yeah. And we'll get an update next month about it from Aura. But are there actions that you want to highlight, or how do you help support that effort, or?
I can give you an update at some point if it's appropriate on the agenda, because I have been working with them to transition my involvement to Aura's.
That's great. So I think Aura is going to come next month and talk about the winter shelter, give us an update.
I think we can. We also did a little mini collaboration with the senior program. It's kind of unremarkable as it was, but it was a good way in which we both made connections. We went to their meeting, and they came to our meeting, and we talked about ways of collaboration. So that's semi-reasonable.
Okay. What else happened in the last year? It's kind of all runs together.
It does.
You set goals.
Well, so let's just leave it here.
Okay.
And then between now and November 5th, we can fill out pieces
right.
that we need to put in there. Does that sound all right? And then at last time, you kind of write up a little bit of a report, and then we kind of present that report.
Right, and I will write up a report based on what I have, and I'll bring it to the next meeting, and then you can change it however you like.
So, and you're going to present it, is that right, Rich?
We're both doing it.
You too.
Yes,
cool.
We're
going to
dynamic duo there.
Cool.
Wasn't there a housing, overall housing plan that we, because we're at the forum at the Ashland Hills?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then when staff presented.
That was last fall, though.
Well, we did the housing element.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
So there's the housing element.
We're trying to put that in the question of where that fit in the year, whether we...
Well, I'm just coming up with something else that we spend time on.
Right.
And then the...
And we had to have input into it.
Yep. Good call. I feel like we did a lot. It was very busy.
Well, those making some of those CDG and other decisions takes a hunk of time.
And I'll write more about the social service grants because you guys did a lot of work around.
You know, we did. I think the council would be interested. We did. On the grant applications, a much more thorough job than we'd ever done before. We scheduled additional meetings and had our act together.
Right.
And I think it worked very well.
Some success stories out of that.
The social service grants?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's not obvious, but I mean, people moving things forward. But,
I have reports coming in.
Yep.
I can give data, which we did do once, and that was helpful, wasn't it? Okay.
So, number four is... Such a long consolidated annual performance evaluation report public hearing.
Right. It's one of those CDBG things that happens every
year. That's the
year.
Report that's in here that's almost incomprehensible.
You know, it used to
Not
be
your
so
fault.
Much
Not
better
your
when we wrote them, but now there's this data. Well, yes and no. So I used to write them, and they were so much better before when we just had a vague template.
Yeah.
Now this is all in a database, and I get these boxes with these questions, and then it's supposed to autofill from the data that I input on the grants, but it really doesn't. And that's why these tables are so wonky. Anyway, so we usually call it the caper, because it's easier to say. And yes, I'm so sorry about looking at these goals, which are actual goals, and then trying to match them up with the strategic plan outcomes is really weird in these tables. Suffice it to say, you all probably remember the grants that were made last year in 2018 and who the grantees were. And so out of that, just this is the helpful part. So St. Vincent de Paul assisted 13 households, which is not people, just households, with the grant money we gave them. And Maslow Project assisted 115 homeless teens engaged in the school district with the funding that we gave them. We had a couple of other programs which were funded later in the year. We funded the Public Works Department with some funding to purchase audible signals. And so that's why you get this giant number of 981 for facilities improvements, because it's really just the census data for how many sight-impaired people we have in the city, which isn't to say that that's they all benefited from those, but that's the best number we have, and that there weren't visitors who were also benefiting from that improvement. And then we also assisted the fire department with their housing safety program later in the year, so not at the regular cycle, but sort of outside that cycle. And that number is actually
15
households, because that's a standalone number. It's not getting parsed out like these other ones. So those are the outcomes we have right now. We also funded in that same year the Columbia Care Project, but they gave us the money back because it was causing a little bit of, we talked about that already, where because they took the federal money, they'd be required to the to be held to the environmental review standards of the federal government, and it was onerous. So they gave us that money back. We also awarded funding to Habitat for Humanity to purchase a piece of property on which to build 5 units of affordable housing on off Nevada Street, and that project has not moved forward. I think it will probably be canceled. That planning project will move forward. I don't think that Habitat will be the partner. And so that's the part that we'll
have to re-claim. So that'll come back to us when the new partner comes in.
Well, maybe. Hopefully. We'll see what happens.
Oh, if they could do it without applying for any funds.
It could, right, yes.
But we should still sort of hear about it.
I don't know when that development will move forward, and that's the piece that I am not sure about. And I think the developer decided that it would they could do it themselves if they want. I mean, there was the option that they could do it themselves, and so they didn't necessarily need to partner with Habitat for Humanity. Habitat also, and this is part of that bigger discussion, which we haven't entirely had yet, around the city's housing program, that we had within our annexation ordinance, we allow ownership units at the 60% of area median income level, and that developers who propose that income target have to provide the least amount of units in their development. And this developer did propose that with the idea that they could partner with Habitat because Habitat can fund their own projects, and that Habitat used to target households at 60% of area median income. But then since then, Habitat has said that they can't do that anymore, that 60% is too low. They can't income qualify people even under their own program, and that they really are now doing ownership housing with people at the 80% of area median income. Mm-hmm. And so they're not even able to meet that standard. And that's where the problem lies with this funding that we gave them. So initially, they were the partner in this planning project, and then Habitat said, well, we just can't make that pencil right anymore. So we are in the process of proposing changes to the affordable housing program that is going to eliminate that option for developers, because there's just not enough subsidy, and there really aren't that many loan programs for buyers at that income level to qualify to purchase those units. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge.
But you say we're getting ready to eliminate it. that would come here for the start.
Right. Okay. It's one of the options that are proposed, just because that's the feedback that we're getting from affordable housing providers. Rental housing at 60% is still fine because there are funding sources for that, just not ownership.
Housing trust fund monies could be targeted to lower income.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know if we want to make it a desired piece of data for awarding housing trust fund monies. But
it would just depend. And that's part of the larger discussion, I think, around whether we would choose the option of eliminating that as an option, because I think to some extent it benefits developers, not that I'm saying like financially that benefits them, but that if they choose that option, they can provide the least amount of units in the affordable housing program under the annexation ordinance. But if there are no partners and there's no lending, then they're providing a product that isn't really that valuable to our community if there aren't any people who could buy it. I mean, certainly someone who had the cash, right, like a retired person, there's
score a great deal.
Right. So there's like two ownership units in our affordable housing program that's at that level, that 60% level. And they have, one of them has turned over twice now. And in both situations, the person was a retired person on a fixed income who came in with an asset. Like, they had a house before and they sold it. So they didn't have to qualify for a loan. They could buy the unit outright, and their income was low enough that they qualified. But those are really, I mean, there are other circumstances where people could purchase that unit, but it's not as easy as it was in, 2006 when our ordinance was passed initially, when you could go down with that income and get a loan at, any bank or through rural development or, all these other agencies. Now, those lenders won't loan to people who have an income that's that low, generally, to purchase a house. And so it just is a very narrow market. But anyway, I think that's a bigger conversation that we can
Linda.
Have.
So surely this is a problem with other cities besides us.
Maybe
it's time to lobby HUD about their regulation.
At
least send them a letter. This doesn't work here, and I suspect it doesn't work anywhere.
And so that's our ordinance, so we can change
it. Oh, that's a city ordinance.
It's a city ordinance, so we could change it. Well, our issue is that we used our HUD money to fund an organization to purchase this property in order to build these units, and then they came in and said, well, it turns out we're not going to be able to do that anymore. It just doesn't fit the model we have.
So the 60% number is a city number?
The 60% is a city number. It's in our annexation ordinance. We have this table that says, depending on the size of your development, you have to provide some affordable housing in a situation where you're annexing or zone change. And then here's the table. If you're targeting 60%, you have to provide 15% of the overall development as affordable housing. If you do 80% of area median, then it's like 20%. If you're doing up to 100, which is really market rate, then you'd have to provide a much greater number because really that's, it's market rate almost. So the 60% is desirable because it's the lowest percentage of units that you would have to provide as a developer, so it's the least amount of money out of your, budget. Yeah. And in the past, one of the options in the annexation ordinance is you could build it yourself, or you could partner with an affordable housing developer. You could donate the land to them or sell the land to them, and they can develop it. And at the time, that's what Habitat did. That was their model.
So it's Habitat just the only organization that can do this, or are there other organizations that are doing the 60%?
There is one other organization that I know of, and it is the difference between ownership and rental housing. Okay. So, like, Housing Authority does 60%, but they don't do ownership housing. Access has done that. They just do rental housing, although they're not doing
ownership. What about NeighborWorks?
So NeighborWorks is the only other one.
They're doing ownership.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they have been in talks with this developer about whether they can do that, and they were looking at funding from the state in order to accomplish it.
So just on where we're at, this is something that's going to come back to us, and it's a very significant thing that's going to come back to us. But in terms of this particular line item on our agenda. Our goal for this is, do we need to approve this?
You do. So, okay. This is just that cycle for CDBG. We make awards. We do the action plan where we tell HUD this is, you know, who we awarded and what they say they're going to do. And then this is the end of the year. This is who we awarded, and when we said this is what they were going to do, this is what they actually did. And so it's that closing of the year is how I think of it. And it has, you know, other information about the continuum of care and other grants that are going on in the community and how many homeless people were helped with Project Community Connect event. And there's some interesting demographics, though they're hard to tease out sometimes. But it's a public hearing for people who follow CDBG to come and speak about how well or not well we're doing.
I was with you for a moment. What is the hearing?
The hearing is just to make comments on the CAPR, and then if there are any comments, I would have to send those comments to HUD. Like someone could say, Ashland is doing a horrible job.
When is the hearing?
It's right now.
So we are holding a hearing, and so then we need to open it up to anybody that would like to speak to the consolidated plan report.
Hearing none.
On the plan, there's just a typo.
Oh, there's a typo.
Okay.
You can tell me afterwards, and I'll fix it. And then tomorrow this plan gets sent up to HUD for approval.
Okay.
Again.
So that, hence the public hearing on it. And it was noticed?
Yes.
How was that advertised?
It's a legal notice in the Daily Tidings, or the Tidings, I guess is what it's called now.
So our job is to make a motion to accept this report.
I still move.
Move to do it. Anybody going to second it?
Second.
Second it. Okay. So now we're going to have a discussion on this. Now that I've sort of figured out what it is, I did read it, not carefully, because it had lots of pieces in it. Is there a way in the future that we can do a better noticed and clearer report that the public could actually react to?
You have to write another one.
But
well,
I'm not for this. I'm just saying, Dan. I mean,
I could do a bullet point memo about the highlights, and so HUD requires that this gets noticed in the paper 30 days prior to the public hearing to allow comments. It's also noticed
functionally. How would we
get comments on it?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, we're adhering to the basic rule, but is it desirable? Is something going
to
go awry?
You know, probably not. This is my bias in this, is that this is an incredibly important funding stream that historically has been for low-income communities that is under attack by the national government that wants to get rid of it. And they haven't been able to do it because cities like it, and they usually abuse it. We do a pretty good job of not doing that, but it seems to me that it doesn't seem like it takes an enormous amount to, as Linda said, you can have the report, but have a little bullet thing, and then actually put out to the world a notice that said, this is money that's going to affordable housing and to programs for low-income people.
Oh, maybe we should do that in the update.
What?
We should do that in the update.
The update to the city council?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's a great
idea.
That
we want to do that.
Yeah.
Just because I know, I have a MSW student in Grants Pass, and one of the things she started doing was monitoring what they do in Grants Pass with this. Oh. And it was completely untransparent. You could not figure it out, and she came back and reported that she was the only one that actually tried to show up at a hearing.
Yes.
Because she was looking for it, but was bewildered by it.
Is this a vehicle that we can use to protect or increase funding? I thought it was to sustain it, and the report is designed to show that we're doing this and this and this, and if we don't, we get cut in our funding.
Right.
It doesn't seem that this is going to influence HUD's leadership in terms of public opinion or political stances. It's just a bureaucratic report, and you have to figure out what you can get away with in your numbers. I mean, not that I'm suggesting you inflate them, but you're aware as a municipality that this is the game that's played. You just try to strengthen your hand.
I would just only reverse argue that the programs that we funded are damn good. They really, and they are, and apart from if you don't have to read them in this kind of little bureaucratic way, it's actually something that people should be, well, they could hate it or they could be proud of it. I think they could
so
be kind of proud of it.
So you're interested in educating Ashland residents.
Right. And we do this every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would seem to me that if we detranslated it from bureaucracy to something that was kind of even reasonably useful for people, we might get somebody to pay attention a little bit.
Well, why don't you direct Linda to do that?
We can't.
I can do that. You know, we used to write these ourselves and make our own tables, and we would include all of the things that the city did. So including all the affordable housing stuff that's not related to CDBG. They don't want any of that anymore because it has nothing to do, you know, with CDBG. But it was a really comprehensive list of all the different things that the city does. The social service grants and the ARUs and condominium conversions. We had everything in there. The ELEAP program, the money that the utility department.
Great report.
It was, it really highlighted all the different comprehensive things the city did. And so that was, it used to be a really nice report, and also was a lot more readable. But you're right, the purpose of this document is so that the Congress can see how this money was used, and that the purpose of these public hearings is for people to come and say, this process hasn't been transparent, or this money didn't go to this. And so that's, the comments to HUD are really important, and the legal notices I have to do are really important, because if someone sees that these things are not happening in the way they should, they are supposed to be able to tell HUD, look, the city's not administering this money the way that they should. It's not really an issue for us. We don't have so much money that we're putting in fountains and doing things we shouldn't be doing, which is why we don't get a lot of input. But I think you're both right.
Okay, so we can, the next time around, we can have a little bit of a newer format.
Yeah, I'll just do a memo that highlights all the pieces, and then for the annual update, I will just do highlights of...
Excellent.
Because... Yeah. It's interesting, when we give the report, it's not the end of the year, so we never get to tell the council, this is what happened with this money, other than, you know, what's in this report, which I don't even want to read it.
Okay, so we have a motion, and it's been seconded to accept this report for HUD. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we've approved the 219 report. So we're going to move to the review and discussion of Housing Bill 2116. My mind's already
campground
out there. That's the how many campgrounds we can have, right?
Well, accommodations that are not appurtenant to a yurt. I had to look that up. Means attached. It looks very, you talked to Pam I missed the meeting.
It wasn't a meeting. I saw her at a different event, and I asked her about that bill because she didn't highlight it in her overview of the things that had happened for the year at the legislature. So I talked to her privately and said, you know, why? And she said that she was approached by Medford because of the tiny house, the two pieces of land adjoining each other. They wanted to expand that, but they were prohibited from doing that due to some strange regulations. So this was basically a housekeeping thing, mm-hmm. tidying up the language. It was very old, the way it was written, and that allowed them to go ahead and have the second parcel of land designated for the tiny house bill.
Well, that confuses me because the house bill is talking about structures that are
yurts and tents
that you can disassemble, and there's a strong argument for temporary, and the word there, transitional housing, and specifically in the bill, they're talking about tents and yurts potentially temporary water supplies and other things, and it's really a good. It sounds much better than a housekeeping bill because it allows this property to be used in this way without being restricted by other legislation or ordinances.
She said she would be willing to come and address the commission, but she couldn't do it this week. She said, have you email her and set up a date for her to come and talk about it with us.
My question would be great.
Sounds like retreat stuff to me.
In reading the bill, it's giving municipalities the authority to authorize up to two of these spaces for transitional housing, and as opposed to shelters and low-income housing, tiny house villages, whatever.
But I thought tiny houses could be a part of this.
It doesn't
read
that way to me. No.
I think it's transitional housing, and the tiny houses are movable. So,
But,
it says, it's talking about in the form of yurts for use, transitional housing, individual units. There's some part of it.
Well, if it was designed for Medford so that they can have their two tiny house places.
It's the Oregon League of Cities.
It was already on the books. Her job was just to clean up the language, make it more readable, make it more relevant to today, and allow the joining of two parcels. And that's what she told me.
But the question that occurs to me is that this has passed, and it's giving towns the authority to use land in the way that was previously restricted and not allowed. And this is Rogue Retreat was recently approached by the county about land in a floodplain that could be used in this manner, and it's astounding that the county is coming to to an organization and to voluntarily let us use land. And it's just happened last week, actually. And I think it's connected to this. But it's campgrounds, tent cities, that kind of thing.
Just temporary stuff.
And I think we need something like that.
Yeah, that scares me, actually.
Well, the reason they're doing it is because it's in a floodplain. If it's temporary, it doesn't necessarily have to follow the same restrictions as something that's permanent. So you would have a better chance of doing something that's temporary and transitional in a floodplain lot than you would...
It just makes me think of the newspaper articles where they, you know...
Right.
Flash flood or
right.
something.
Right, flash flood happens and all the homeless people get washed away in their temporary buildings.
Right. Yep. But in Portland, they're really declaring homelessness an emergency. Mm-hmm. And they're out of options. So it's better for them to do a temporary campground than to have people on the side of the freeway.
I can tell you, as a front counter staff, there's been a lot of people come to the front counter and ask about this bill and property to have transitional housing in Ashland. Already.
Somebody that has the property that wants to do it?
Mm-hmm. They want to know about the city property.
They're asking the planning department what's involved, and of course we're still trying to
figure it out,
but there are people already asking about doing it in the city limits.
Wow.
Who are they? I don't know their names.
I know.
Interesting. It's just going to happen all on its own.
Well, I think there's been a lot of...
It's not going to happen on its own. It's got to be initiated by the municipality.
Yeah, the city. They got to let go of some of their...
So... Linda's suggestion or kind of thing that she threw out was that we could do it at the retreat, which we do in...
Well, to have Pam...
Pam come, and because it sounds like something that we're continually interested in, but we don't have a complete grasp of all the things that we need to do for it. And so
this
that sounds like a good place to do it.
Forward, if you've read the bill.
I did read it, actually.
I read the bill, and... I remember Brandon was here and he commented on it that it's for real and it could apply to us.
I'm still confused about the building code stuff. That's the part I don't understand.
Well,
it falls under different jurisdiction, especially when you have something like this that says, okay, it's transitional and temporary, so doesn't have to fall under the same restrictions. There'll still have to be some life and safety restrictions to a certain point, which Rogue Retreat met with their stuff there. But see, they don't have plumbing or... do you have power in those little houses?
No.
Yeah. See, normal building code would not allow that. That would not be allowed to be something
so
that you could live in.
That's the part that
This relaxes that and allows the municipality to call the shots.
But from my understanding is that the building code division has not relaxed those yet. And so you can't do it until the building code division revises their codes.
Correct.
Which I think is...
But it references Oregon statutes that are relaxed.
We'll suspend those.
It's also, I have heard the building department and the planning department talk about there is a time frame for municipalities to try and get stuff organized. Mm-hmm. So
when Pam and I worked on something along these lines, before she went up, or just about the time she got started, we constantly ran up against state stuff. So I think she'll be really helpful to educate you as to what they've relaxed it. Because every time we wanted to do something X, Y, and Z, there was some state resistance and I think that's probably what she's been working on, if I understand.
The city's building codes are
the state's building
right,
codes.
Right, which right, is identical. Right, so right. If the state says no,
that's exactly
so it's also right. At the state, yeah, the state level.
And that's the part I was confused about, right. That even though this bill says that it isn't subject to that, has building code right. Agreed to it? Because right. It's a different division. So it would,
that's
I think,
big question.
Having Pam come and yeah. Sort of clarifying those yeah. Things. And then
this is also the year, every 2 years, the state revises their building codes. In 2019, they're in the process of doing it right
and
now.
That was
so
what I
would imagine by
Brandon.
The end of the year that they will have something in place for this.
Yeah, that was my understanding from Brandon, is that Building Codes Division knows they have to do this and that they're working on it, but they haven't done it yet. But anyway, I think we could get clarification.
So we're just at a kind of an informational piece on this, but the suggestion was around the retreat. Mm-hmm. So let me just question, at what meeting do we want to look at our, because we have to change our November and December meetings, and then we would need to set a time for the larger gathering that we would do. And I'm thinking we are not ready to do it now, but would we do that in October? Or no, we would have to do it in October because we would need to change
right,
the
right. And I
November
have it on
dates.
The list for
so it's on
October.
The next list
yeah.
That we're going to look at those dates, including that, and that what we want to do is to issue an invitation to Pam to come to that this probably December meeting.
Excuse me. Why are we needing to carve out something special? Couldn't we put her on the agenda for 30 minutes at her convenience?
We could. So the only thing is, next meeting is full, yeah. The agenda for next meeting. And then at the next meeting, we have to decide how we'll do November and December.
Yeah. Okay.
And December is usually our retreat, so we just have more time.
Okay. I see.
But you could do November. That's more convenient for her, too.
So we can decide with her
yeah.
Scheduling times,
yeah.
But I think the notion is we want to schedule her in and make this a significant part of one of the meetings
yeah.
That we do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seems a little goal-ish for the next year.
Okay. So I'm going to stop at this point and ask if Dennis has anything he wants to share, because you were doing 5 as your time, and we've got 10 minutes, and so I just wanted
to go talk to people at the Habitat for Humanity event. And ask them about this. No, I won't ask them about the 60%. That is where I'm headed next. It is an organization that the church I belong to does some work with, and we like to support them. Anyway, you know, things have been very quiet city council-wise. for the last month, we're headed towards the canal decision. That's not next week. Next week is a pretty easy agenda. We are talking City Hall on Monday, for those who are interested. And more the energy that I've been putting into things in the cost review subcommittee, we've been meeting. At this point in time, we're focusing on the ambulance service, what that costs, what the options are, what that should look like. The general fund for anybody that's involved in anything that has to do with the city, the general fund is going to be where the battle is. That's what we're looking at. PERS, healthcare costs, fire departments, police departments, ComDev. All these things make up a little bit of parks, make up the general fund. So we're piece by piece looking to understand, inform ourselves, because this deep dive has never really been done since I've been around, to take a look at some of these things and see if we can't figure out how to squeeze more out of a dollar, which is the ultimate goal. at times a daunting one. But other than that, we're moving in the fall. Things have been quiet. I mean, we try to keep it. I push to keep things quiet as much as possible in August. We all need a little bit of a break. We don't want to get too much going in the summertime. It used to be kind of an informal rule that we do that. So, but
is it appropriate to ask you about the canal debate?
Sure.
It seems to me, in talking to neighbors and reading and comments in the papers, that we're really polarized on this. I'm not really sure who to believe. And they're really far apart. And I'm sure you're aware of that. But
no, I haven't heard anything. No, it is kind of the quintessential Ashland. How do you decide this? I've had two meetings this week. One was on E. coli. I know more about E. coli than I ever thought I'd ever know. And the other was on evaporation rates, which was fascinating. One of the gentlemen that's involved in all this, Terry, is a former NOAA scientist. And one of the great things about council, if anybody ever here decides to do something like this, is you get exposed to all these things that you never thought you would actually sit down and have discussion of. This is a fascinating history lesson and discussion that this really high-level person put me through. It's going to come down, in my opinion now. I mean, we've already signaled, by the way. We had a meeting where it looked like a 3-3 tie. And so I don't know. I haven't talked to John on how he would vote. We shouldn't do that anyway. But it's going to come down to do you use every drop of water, therefore piping, or do you allow for a human element and the water feature? It's going to be that decision. Right? I don't think there's a right and a wrong in this. I think this is just going to be a decision point that good people are going to make, and then other good people are going to be unhappy with the decision, and some people are going to be happy. It's just kind of the way it goes. But it's been a fascinating, it's really been a good process of community government. Both sides have been respectful for the most part, outliers always. People have been informative, have done a lot of high-end work and research, supplied that, alternatives. So, I mean, I think in general, it's one of those things that I love about Ashland, because it's a robust discussion done in a manner that respects, for the most part, the people that are there to make the decision and the process and all that kind of stuff. We've had a lot of meetings,
we've had a lot of community meetings and comments at the front camp.
Yeah, no, it's but it's one of those things that tells you that people pay attention, are invested, and you can't say to somebody, if you want to pipe it, you're wrong. And you can't say to somebody, if you want to leave the water running in it, you're wrong. And there's no wrong between those two, and yet we're going to have to decide.
Can't you just pipe half of it?
you say that in jest. I asked, is there such a thing as a
half pipe
ditch convertible? In other words, some years you don't need it. I mean, you actually, with climate change, you don't necessarily know which direction we're going to go, right? So is there some way that we could have it open, and then if you needed to, in the right conditions,
ditch.
You know, I don't know, you know, put in steel grates over the top of it. I don't know, but everybody looked at me like you were all looking at me and going, you've been around too long. You know. So anyway, that's... I did go to an interesting meeting yesterday
when we're talking about some of these, was it yesterday? Who was it?
Tuesday.
Put on by, I think Medford and Jackson County together on their Greenway efforts and some of the things that they're trying to accomplish there. And one of the things that resonated with me that I thought that they're doing a better job of is bringing people in to not just arrest people and move them out of there and move them out of the Greenway, but bringing services in at night. And they've been having a good, so I just thought, wow, there's an idea that fits somewhere. And I give them a lot of credit for doing that. So it was an interesting presentation. There's going to be another one coming in October. Do you get these?
So I
would send them around.
The mayor sent me an email asking me to go, but I already had meetings scheduled for that time, so I wasn't able to go. But hopefully, if you want to send it along too, then I'll try to make sure I can go to the next one.
Do they send out any summaries?
I would hope so.
If they did, it would be something that we would all like to look at, I would think.
I will check.
Can I just say, I don't know if we've all done this, but I just want to say thank you for, in the whole budget process, we needed to ensure the funding for social service funding and for the housing trust fund. And that wasn't a given, and I know that your participation helped that. And I just think as we go forward, I think as we present to the city council, it's another reason to be really clear about the process and the value that we get out of both of those things. Because as they're looking for every dollar, they're going to continue to look there too.
A few years,
It is alarming. And impact of PERS. We're trying to understand that. Our next meeting is on that. The impact of healthcare, and those two things are like being painted into a corner. It's frustrating because you have very little to do except if you can. And we hope that by at least anticipating better, we can have some impact, but it's going to squeeze things out of the general fund, and that's why it's important. Thank you, but I think the work that you all do, bringing this forward and making sure that people understand the good work that's being done, is really important for people to know and continue to know, because people like us sit on budget committees, and it becomes a very easy low-hanging fruit if you're not careful. This and the economic development grants along with them, which is another one that you kind of had to fight for, sort of the seed money of things that happen in a community that help organizations grow, is as important. I get it. I mean, we have big things that we have. We have a city hall that needs to be dealt with, but I mean, at the other hand, end of these is stuff that just makes things work better in certain ways for the humans that live in here. So it's challenging. It's going to be very challenging the next go round.
Great.
Thank you.
Could you say something briefly about the Snowberry 2 project?
Right.
Really? What did I do to you? You're talking. This is Rushdale, right?
But you approved it.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of a no-brainer. I mean,
it was.
That wasn't hard. If they could all be that easy.
So it's gone to appeal. It's already
It came to appeal on our end of it, which I mean, it's a funny word and it's a funny thing to do to us, because the appeal window is about a nano inch, right? It's really not much of an appeal on anybody's side. We're just basically deciding is that the Planning Commission wasn't crazy or drunk that night. And so, but I mean, it really, there's not a lot there for anybody to appeal. But it's the step before LUBA.
Well, I was going to say, so if you've, at your appeal, gone ahead and approved it, can he still appeal to LUBA?
Yes.
And he is
promised
he going
to do
to?
Oh, he promised.
He has till tomorrow to do it.
Oh, he has
tomorrow. Tomorrow is the deadline, I believe.
Does the paperwork have to come through our office?
Oh.
Yes.
Does it?
Well, he would send it, then we have like a 21 days to write up something, and I'm not a planner, so forgive me.
So we'll know tomorrow.
It'll be interesting.
Yes, we will.
Because he was in full threat as a, you know.
He'll lose.
It's so frustrating. But it's
well,
the time.
Here you have a community that, you know, we're trying to do all the right things.
Correct.
We have this really good, for the right reasons, we have this really good project sitting there. And like happens, I shouldn't say too often.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's the wrong things for the wrong reasons. So, well, we'll hope that the right thing turns out. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks,
bye, Dennis.
Okay. So now we're going to look at the commissioner attendance policy. So there is a little memo with this, right, that refers that?
Yes.
It's the very last page. Here it is. Second to the last.
Second to the last page. Meetings and attendance. And this is directly out of our municipal code. So it's, you know how you guys have your own mission, and then there's a municipal code section that deals with all commissions and committees, and it was all standardized a few years ago.
I want to get an alternative.
An alternate commissioner person. Well, that would be great.
No, I mean that. I'm making fun of it.
Yeah. Oh,
no, I'm thinking it's a good idea.
Wait, an alternative what?
An alternate.
Well, it says commissioner. You can have an alternate to commissioner. Come and vote and registered as you being there, but it qualifies it and says if you're appointed by the mayor or somebody,
that would be us.
No, but it would be great if the mayor would appoint an alternate for when we end up having a vacancy, mm-hmm. because that's the appointment process takes so long for us to go. Like, so now here we are. You kindly went back through. So Joseph, who was appointed in April, started in May, attended in May and June, and then has been absent for July and August and obviously September.
And last month his packet came back undeliverable.
Right, we have no way to... his emails come back, his packets come back, so we're not able to communicate with him either. Right, so...
He's a student, though, right?
I do not know.
I don't think he is anymore. Sarah expressed that she was on another commission with him, and she expressed that he seemed to be having some personal problems and was not attending those commission meetings either.
So, as we look at that question, am I correct in understanding that there is not a set standard? It is...
Well, it's in this thing, it says you must attend 75% of the meetings.
Yeah. Right.
75%.
Mm-hmm. In 1 year.
Yeah.
In a year.
So what is that
It
number?
Also says that you have to...
That's 3/4 of them. So if we have 12 meetings, that's...
They're supposed to notify you as the chair and the staff liaison that they're not going to be attending any meeting.
With eight?
You've already missed two.
Yeah, but she gave notice.
We approved it, too.
Right.
Oh, she gave notice.
Yeah.
And so it's just letting people know I won't be at this meeting.
Well, that's
then
boring.
It's excused.
Right. But having somebody disappear on you is a way to get them off the commission. They're not going to reappear.
Thing is, if you get kicked off, you can reapply.
Yeah. Well, you know, we actually had to remove someone before. It was actually before these new rules were put in place, because there were no rules. And so the commission drafted a letter to the mayor and the city recorder saying, this person isn't participating anymore. We would really like to fill that seat because we would like someone who would participate. And then that was granted. But I like the alternate idea because this whole process takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we still...
Well, let me just...
Who was... I can't remember her name. Who was the woman with the short blonde hair who just came off this past year?
Oh, Sue Crater.
Sue Crater.
I wonder if she would be willing to do an alternate because she didn't want to be on full time, but could it be like a past person who's familiar with the committee? And so they could easily
That would be
step in.
Ideal. That could actually participate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I misunderstanding this? Because it seems to me that because we're appointed by the mayor that we're not eligible
right.
to have alternates.
I don't know how in what situation the alternate does apply. Who isn't appointed? Everybody's appointed.
There's some arguments against an alternate, and the reason I think is that the work that we do is so critical. Well, if you're not keeping up with it, just being here at one point doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
In my sense, I mean, it gets you. It's for the quorum rule, I guess, but it isn't the best democratic procedure, I don't think. Unless they attended more often to know what everything was going. I guess.
Or at least have a second person appointed in case somebody has to leave the commission, they're automatically.
And that has happened. I mean, it has happened that someone's had to take like a hiatus or, you know, that happens on other commissions too.
My simple suggestion is in other organizations, if they've missed the number, that we send them a letter and it says that you missed the number and we want to know what your intentions are, and we see. Now, if you don't get a response to it, then at the next meeting you would say, we didn't get a response to it, and that puts us at another level of decision making.
Not to respond is to respond.
What?
Not to respond is to respond.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we can certainly do that. Well,
and if he's moved, he hasn't given anyone information on how to contact him since then.
So his phone number's not working.
Well, I think we can ask Sarah.
I never got his phone.
Also, to make, I mean, Sarah can do it. I think actually I got his phone number in here too somewhere. Maybe.
Do you?
Strike on.
Maybe not.
I think I looked at his application.
Well, and certainly, yeah, I mean, we can follow up with him just to see, you know.
Can we just send a letter that just is, it just says we've missed three times, and that.
Well, but if his mail's being returned and his email's being returned, we don't have a way to do that.
Yeah, we don't have a way to. So what I can do is draft a letter and then call him.
Do we have a email?
It doesn't work either.
It doesn't work either.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there we go.
It's just kind of unplugged.
Yeah.
But.
So why do we need to contact?
Because we're nice. I think it's just a fair procedure to give people because he's three, and that's sort of what I guess that's what
the,
we're looking at.
We have 12 meetings, and eight would be 75%. Four is the end.
And there doesn't seem to be am I right? Did I read this thing wrong? What is, if somebody misses that amount, what happens at that point?
What does it say? Regular membership. Seems so crazy. We'd have to go to the city council to do it. It says, the city council, with or without cause, may by majority vote of the city council at a regular meeting remove any regular commission or board member prior to the expiration of the term of appointment. Written notice of removal to the affected member shall be provided. Removal shall be handled with respect and courtesy. If a member resigns or is removed, the mayor shall appoint a replacement for the remainder of the term in accordance with paragraph C above. Notwithstanding the above procedure, removal of a plan. Oh, that's for planning commission specifically. So, I mean, I think we're doing the right process. It would probably go to the council at a consent agenda, and then hopefully the mayor could appoint someone at that time.
Right. That's later. The first thing we're doing is this first step.
Yes. So we'll do this, and then if we don't hear anything from him, or if we do and he says, I really, things have changed in my life and I can't do that now, then I would draft an email, essentially, and send it to both the mayor and the city recorder and say, you know, our new member is unable to continue. Can we remove him and appoint a new member at the same time?
He was looking for his
phone. I was looking for my phone.
How am I going to take it from you?
It's in the car.
In regards to the minutes, do I put his name in here?
I think so.
Just say fair.
Okay. I think you could say that we had a discussion and we are sending a letter, but I don't see why it wouldn't go in there.
When I first read the minutes, I sort of cringed because I missed the meeting. I'm like, no.
You, Linda.
You also gave notice.
You're all right.
I thought the same thing. I opened the packet and I was like, oh, I did miss.
You were like, geez, I missed you.
I know, and I am so in trouble. Look at this.
It's just kind of clear that he's not
serious.
Clara, I think a misconception. As I read it, you have to attend 9 meetings a year, and separately, you're supposed to give 48 hours notice if you can't, unless it's an emergency. But the 48 hours does not excuse you from the 3/4 of the meeting.
So I have heard that before. That has come up with
other... That's the way it's written.
Right. No, that's come up before with other members, especially because there have been other commissions who have had problem members who kind of come in and out. So they'll be gone for like 2 meetings, and then they'll come to 1 meeting, and they'll be gone for another 2 meetings. And so if the commissioners, the other commissioners, felt like that was not helpful, then they could ask to have that person removed. I think this commission has always felt like as long as we were notified, wasn't sort of an ongoing issue, that it wouldn't be.
Well, it doesn't adhere to this policy.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
And I don't know that anyone ever really misses that many meetings, you know, in a year. Mm-hmm. Missing 3 meetings in a year. Because some people do, right?
You can. Right. This says you can miss 3 meetings, and you should properly notify mm-hmm. people.
Right, but it
doesn't. But if you miss 4, years
and at risk.
Violation of this policy.
Right. But I think informally, I think we're in charge of it.
Yeah.
And
right.
So I think.
These are here in case you need to.
Informally, we can disregard any policy.
Pretty much. But we don't have to, because I got to say, this is one of the meetings I go to that everybody, there's a lot of show up, and so that's good. But I think when we're. There's a hole, then we just need to think about it, and I think follow the plan that we just did.
How about if you like somebody?
This has happened on other commissions also, where there is someone who has had an extended illness or had to take care of someone who had an extended illness. Mm-hmm. And so that was considered excused, even though they would miss those meetings, and then they weren't removed. So I think it really is about this. It's circumstantial, and that's why every month in the minutes there is this table, because we actually have to report to the city recorder attendance. Mm-hmm. But nothing really happens.
So I'm going to roll on so that we're going to make sure that we're there. And the next piece is the rent burden form, which is for October 21 from 6:30 to 8 at Ashland Hills Inn. And we've had a subcommittee, a work group.
When is it?
October 21 at Ashland Hills Inn from 6:30 to 8. And we have a stellar a group of people participating on a panel. Pam Fan who's just a treasure resource from the Community Alliance of Tenants, that's coming down from Portland. We have two people from the landlord groups down here, and we have a lawyer from Center for Nonprofit Legal Services that does renter issues. We have a little video about Senate Bill 608. We have Jeff Golden. Now we've talked with him, and he's kind of going to do a kickoff. It's not like a real speech so much as it is a kind of a welcome and kind of review of kind of why we're here in terms of positive direction. So Linda has agreed to be a moderator, facilitator, person going through this. So that the setup is pretty good. What we're missing a little bit is the outreach component. Sarah Spancell has agreed to put that together, but just hasn't arrived yet. But that should arrive soon.
Yes.
Soon, and now it's the time to get out there. Right. And so.
And I think she intended to have it available today, but something must have come up.
correct. So we will, if we get this, we can send it out through right. you to everyone, and then that the work group has a plan to do outreach, but we can all be our own outreach ambassadors.
So what constituencies are we specifically wanting to get there?
I think everyone. We're looking at both landlords and tenants. Mm-hmm. Because we want it to be a robust, balance and solution-oriented discussion. So I went to the landlord-tenant SB 608 overview, and one of the comments they made was that not a lot of tenants attend
right.
any of those sessions. Yeah. It's just hard to get tenants out. So I do think it's important to hear from tenants, and we will be providing them with resources for getting their questions answered or, you know, if they do have specific issues that they want to discuss. The other piece that I just wanted to touch on briefly is that I did clarify with Bill Molnar, who's the community development director and my direct boss, that in order for the city to do a press release or some sort of advertising around this, there is a little bit of process. So the flyer will have to go through my director and then be looked at by city administration to make sure that it meets the city standards for, public announcements. And then we can put it on the city's website. We can post it to the city's Facebook page, which I guess Sarah explained that it goes on as an event.
Yes.
And then we'll be able to disseminate it from there. And it's just, even though we're not... The Housing and Human Services Commission is hosting this event as part of the purview of the work that you do, education and outreach. So it's well within, the confines of your mission. It's not an endorsement or not a sponsorship, which was something we talk about this last month, where we would have to go to the council to request that we could do this activity if it were a sponsorship or an endorsement of the city. But because it's this group doing the work that we've been tasked to do, it doesn't rise to that level.
So you can announce it when you get this, announce it everywhere. I announced it at the Oregon Strong Voice on Monday night, which is all the unions and all the social change groups that meet monthly. And we'll get a chance to do that before the actual event again, too. So they're committed to turning out people. So
we've been given the information to some of the tenants that come to the counter. We've had
landlord-tenant issues.
So that process is going to take a few days or a week?
Yeah, it shouldn't take too long. It might take a week. So we
really are kind of at deadline.
Yes,
yeah.
We really are. And I think I'll press Sarah tomorrow to see if she has that done.
Yeah.
The other thing was we did send out some information to the Jefferson Exchange, but we have not heard back about whether they would like to have this as a topic. And then I did do some outreach to Connie Saldana at KSKQ, and she's more than happy to plug us into some different times on that radio service to talk about it. And Gina and Sarah have volunteered to be the interviewees in any of those situations.
Cool, nice. Cool.
Yeah, so we're just really waiting for that document.
Yeah, we are. There is a lot of pressure now.
Go into action.
Honestly, I think talk about it at the chamber meeting, because we've got a lot of realtors that come to chamber meetings.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? I think realtors would be great. I mean, I think that the thing that is one of the issues is that there's a lot of confusion about what it is, or there has been. And I think there's a lot of ways, at least from my experience just at the meeting I went to, that people are viewing it in a negative light. And so I think just, recognizing that this is the law now and how can we all move forward in a positive way.
Right. I think that's the theme that we've got is moving forward with solutions. We're not relitigating any of those past things. And I think that's a good point. I was on a webinar today with the Oregon Center for Public Policy on rental assistance programs in the state of Oregon. And in Portland, they have some great programs for providing direct rental assistance that have been funded by foundations, and they have a study of them and the effects of them. And if I can compile what they're going to put all that webinar stuff onto something that we can share out with people. But it is amazing what it does in terms of stabilizing family, stabilizing children. But it does cost, their cost was $700 a month per family.
Hugely reasonable.
Right?
That's really reasonable.
It isn't too bad. I mean, it just depends on how you look at it. But there's different ways that you can think about how you implement it. But in essence, they're not just wanting to stay in Portland. They're looking at ways that we can look at rental assistance in other communities. So there's a number of things that we can talk about that are positive that move us forward. Okay.
And as soon as you get an approved brochure, you'll...
Yes, I will send it out to everyone. I'll post it on the city's website.
Just send me a PDF, I can print.
I can print too, you guys.
Right.
So if you need color, you don't
actually,
have to.
Actually, yeah, that might be. I don't have a. Well, I have a printer, but it hasn't had ink cartridges in a year.
They're the burden of that expense, so we can definitely. The city doesn't pay for very much, so we can pay for printing.
Do you guys need any of the other of us to do like setup or anything like that at the event?
We might, but you know what we would probably do is. We should have another work group meeting and then think about the volunteer pieces and then use Linda as a way to disseminate those needs out and people can respond. Does that sound like okay?
Yeah.
We talked when we were first talking about it, about having dividing into two groups so that landlords and tenants could have separate conversations. Is that not the plan anymore?
The way I understand it is we're doing these presentations from panel and all that, and then we're going to basically have client or audience input into all this, and we're going to kind of list it all out upon things. So we're not dividing people into different camps. We're bringing everybody together, and everybody's going to have a significant time to look at, and so we're going to end up with a list of ideas
And we were going to categorize them by sort of things that can be done locally, things that can be done at the state level, and things that are more private market, so that people have an understanding of, like, these are the things that are within our control.
So we'll have to get, with some people, we're going to have to bring everybody in a little bit before that that meeting.
We looked at the time was our issue, just trying to fit everything in and allowing enough time for the speakers and then dividing up was like, oh, but then you have to add in the time to divide up.
Right.
And then the time to come back together and then to compile that. And so we were just trying to be judicious.
Did you find out, is Medford still doing an event as well?
I haven't talked to them, although I will talk to them about this because we're doing this together. So I don't have to pay for it all.
Okay, so liaison reports. We had Dennis, no SU staff.
So I just have a couple of things. This was, you found this at your place?
Yeah.
So this ties into next month's meeting. Brandon gave a presentation to the Planning Commission, as it says Planning Commission, and the wrong date, but and he had some extras. Well, he actually did it as PowerPoint, and he had printed these out in case the PowerPoint didn't work. But he wanted to give them to you guys because he thought that you would find this interesting. And next month, Brandon will be here doing a presentation about the buildable lands inventory update. And we don't have to go into it too much, but at some point in time, there's a document called the Housing Needs Analysis. And the Housing Needs Analysis and the Buildable Lands Update go together. So it's essentially how much land do we have, what's it zoned, and what can it build out as? And then what are our housing needs into the future, and how do those two things mesh? Do we need more land zoned in a different manner to accommodate our housing needs. So our housing needs analysis will probably be updated in the near future, but in the meantime, the city is undertaking an update of the buildable lands inventory, which they're required to do with the councils. So this is in preparation for that, and then Brandon will come and do a presentation about the BLI to you, which will make it probably a lot clearer than what I could articulate. Next month, we have a pretty full agenda already. I will be gone because I have been asked to speak at a planning conference in Eugene about housing stuff, so that'll be good. And so Brandon will be here to serve as the liaison and to do the presentation. So if you have questions about this, after you look it over, you can ask Brandon about it next month, but he just thought you would find it interesting. On another note, there's another handout, which is this Fair Housing for Shelter Staff and Volunteers training. So as you may recall, in most years, we contract with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon to do different fair housing trainings. Fair housing is a federal requirement, and it's also part of our charge with our HUD grant that we affirmatively further fair housing, and this is one of the ways that we do that. Because our shelters have changed the way they operate, because they have the list of people, and then the people have a guaranteed spot until, you know, the end of the shelter season, then those people are staying in that shelter for longer than 30 days, which makes them subject to fair housing regulations. And so we're doing this training because we have new shelter situations that we have not had in the past, and we have new staff members. But this training is open to all. So if anyone is interested or knows anyone who might be interested in learning about how fair housing law impacts the shelters or impacts them as a volunteer in the shelter, because they all will be subject to fair housing regulations now, which is different than existing. Let's see. Do I have anything else, Liz? Is anything else exciting going on?
No, the news that you aren't going to be here next month.
That was kind of exciting. We can have a meeting without Linda? Really?
I was trying to get out of it. It was interesting because the person who is the contractor who did the regional housing plan, Beth from Echo Northwest, after learning about all of our housing programs, thought it would be great for planners throughout the state to know what people are doing in different cities. So Medford, maybe Bent, and Ashland are going to be on a panel together in a segment. So she submitted a proposal for this to be a segment in the in this statewide conference, and it got accepted. And so then she said, well, would you be willing if it gets accepted? And I was like, oh, yeah. And then she said, well, it's probably going to be the 24th or the 25th. I can't remember. So it was either the Wednesday or the Thursday. And I was like, oh, if it's Thursday, I can't go. If it's Wednesday, then I can go because Thursday I would have this meeting. And we were like, that's fine because Brandon can be my alternate, right? So Brandon would do it. He's a better public speaker anyway. He's a planner, which really helps. And he did the housing program, so just perfect. And then, yeah, it was ended up being Thursday. They couldn't get it switched. And I was like, oh, I can't do it then. And but then Bill said, oh, we need Brandon to be here because he also has to do another BLI presentation to another commission. Yeah. So we're like, oh, Brandon's got to be here, so you're going to have to go. I hate public speaking. I don't know why this happened to me all the time. I don't know that it was really in my job description.
You do well, Akron. You should.
Thank you. So anyway. All the news that I have.
Okay. All the news from Lake Wobegon.
Yeah.
So, are there other general announcements?
I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask.
Okay.
One is, do you remember the guy who was here requesting funds because he was going to do housing that included low income, but he has this, all these various barriers?
Bob Kendrick.
Yeah.
Private market developer.
Yeah, so it's not really about him, but what fund was he requesting money from in terms of doing affordable housing? Because if I, suppose I know somebody, a landlord, that I want to convince to do some affordable housing as part of his development, could he
apply? Is this a
hypothetical?
Huh? Is this a hypothetical situation?
Hypothetically. could he apply for something to help him out with that? Like, is there something that you guys are doing as a...
I don't think he was asking for funds. He was asking for deferred...
Yeah, he was referencing a program that doesn't exist in the state of Oregon, but does exist in the state of California, which is bond financing.
Okay.
And I think the last legislative session did say that cities can now do bonds if they want.
They have to vote on them.
Right, but they have to vote on them. And so it is possible to do it now, but we're not set up to do that. And that's what he wanted to do because he's done it before in California. But your landlord friend, there may be some things, and you and I could talk about that offline, and I don't know if it would work, but we could talk about it.
Okay. Okay. And then my second question is, I was curious if you guys knew of anything that the city of Ashland or people in Ashland are doing in terms of human trafficking. So I've gotten connected to some things in Medford and wasn't sure if there was just like a partnership or if there's anything specifically that we were doing here for that.
Not that I know of. I know of the Medford resources, and I think they are, you know, regional. And then I think, doesn't the police department do a training, some sort of training, in conjunction with Community Works or some organization?
Yeah, I was told to connect with Community Works. Okay.
And what about the SART team? We gave social service grant money to...
That's true.
Sexual assault.
Yes. Yeah.
And she was very good.
Response team. Yeah, she is very good.
Yeah, who is she with again? Is she with Community Works?
No, they're their own entity.
Yeah. They are their own entity.
Yeah.
So I remember her from SART. Presentation.
Yeah, sexual assault.
Response team.
Yes.
And they do outreach to public schools, and they have teams that assist women.
Okay.
You know what I just don't know is how much overlap there is between sexual assault and sex trafficking. You know what I mean? I'm sure there is some overlap, and I'm sure that there is that overlap, they may have more knowledge of what resources are available or the connections. And then there's that woman in Medford who's been like a powerhouse.
Yes.
And I don't remember her name.
And Dunhouse may have information.
Yeah. I think City of Ashland police officers get their training from SART.
I think there's some training. It's advertised really broadly, and it is something that, and I don't know that it's sex trafficking. It might be sexual assault. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's called the assist training. I can't remember. But anyway, I can look.
Yeah.
Yeah, but definitely Community Works. They know everybody. And you have
Go ahead.
Do you want to talk?
Well, I just had another thing that I wanted to mention up in Portland that the Wells Fargo Foundation is funding a huge program that they're initiating in Portland, and it's about land trusts, and it's a 18-month program to convert public properties into assets for permanently affordable housing in emerging neighborhoods. So the emerging neighborhoods, I don't know if we're emerging, but they are, it's just another place to look at, they're looking at public land and turning them into land trusts, and that's buildings or land to do that as a major step forward in terms of affordable housing. So I just wanted to, these things should get on our radar. It's amazing how much money, I mean, they got a huge problem up in Portland, but there's a lot of money that's going up there. We don't need that much, but I think we can use some of the ideas down here that we could
nice
look at how that is working up there, and it may be something that we could look at too.
The question is how truly affordable those conversions are, because there is a tremendous amount of infilling in Portland, taking old houses and remaking them into these new incredible high-rise apartments.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at a public. This is the things that the city owns that they can convert. So I don't know. I just read it today, and I just thought, wow, that's. Yeah. I mean, and they're going to turn them into land trusts, basically, so that they may become permanently affordable. So are there other
Yes, think, I have. Yeah. I went to the Jackson County Homelessness Task Force meeting last Tuesday, and there were some great things happening. Some of the young planners in Medford are researching emergency shelter, and they put a whole plan together. They called me and wanted to know what Ashland did, and I connected them to Kelly Matting. And they're planning to bring it to the city council for approval, and they're thinking of two or three different emergency shelters around the city of Medford when the temperature is 32. Or maybe it was,
32.
32? Yeah, warmer than
But Medford's looking at a whole different set of plans about their emergency. In terms of temperature, they want to drop it to 25.
I thought you said 32, but yeah.
Well, I saw a thing that they were looking at, and they were looking at a whole lot of different options. And one, the one that seemed to be the one that they looked at a lot of different cities, and the one that they seemed to be, well, I don't know what they're arriving at, but it looked like 25 degrees is what they were doing.
I told them that I thought 20 was too warm, too cold.
And I think they're just in the process of writing the ordinance now, and they're looking for feedback from people to say, you know, where are these points? Like one of them was, I was at the Continuum of Care meeting, and Brian Chotun, the city administrator, city manager in Medford, had said that he wanted the wording, or no, it was Kelly who was at the meeting who said that she added the wording
her discretion.
Yes, at the city administrator's discretion. So it doesn't have to be 20 degrees. The city administrator could call it due to inclement weather because it's 32 and it's snowing or raining. So it was suggested that they also add that so that it could be. But the real issue, I think, and I don't mean to interrupt, is about when they look at the looking ahead at how many days in a year that we have at those temperature points, we have a lot of 32-degree days. And can we get enough volunteers to staff a shelter if we're mandated to do it at 32 degrees? Then, you know, what is the implication? What are the implications of that?
Yeah, I talked to them about all those things.
So maybe you discussed it while I was out, but we've all looked at the everybody's.
Was that all?
She has another thing.
Oh, got more.
The other thing that was passed around there was the multicultural fair, which is an annual event for, I think, like 20-some-odd
years. 29 years, I think, just about now.
And that's this Saturday. They said in all the years they've done it, it's never rained on that day.
That's correct. That is true, because I've been at most of them.
The other thing they passed out were Bear Creek Stewardship Days, and apparently Ashland can participate in that. It's also this weekend, the 28th. And I hadn't heard anything about it. I know very little about it, but
isn't it on their city web page?
It should be. Our conservation department is staffing the event.
Yeah, this was a copy that Connie just made for the meeting. It's terrible. It's hard to read in Spanish and in English. So I also wanted to update people on what's happening with the winter shelters. I've been meeting every week, sometimes a couple of times a week with the Cora. They're trying to hire a shelter director. There's a new executive director, and she is great. She's doing a lot of work, but so far the right person hasn't been found for that.
I think they hired somebody.
Today?
No, she came in last week.
Is that maybe the executive director?
Oh, that's a navigator.
That's not the shelter director.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought she was telling me that she was a shelter.
What's a navigator?
A navigator is a person who helps our clients, the homeless population, get the services they need. So if they need a birth certificate or a driver's license or, you know, all these things that you need.
Navigating bureaucracies.
That's a good way to put it.
And they ultimately help people find housing. So there's one shelter guest for the past 2 years who's very old, can't hear well, and they just found housing for him.
That's so exciting.
So it's,
This might sound stupid to everybody here, but at the emergency shelter, do they offer meals?
Not
yes
really.
And no.
No. Meals, we're in a crisis of providing meals for our unhoused and low-income population.
So it's simply like a place to sleep.
Well, there is a kitchen there. We're not allowed to cook in it.
Oh.
So the hope is that people will bring in snacks and food from the outside.
Well, you're still doing the churches coming in.
But we're asking for sponsors.
To do dinners.
And whoever's sponsoring a night of shelter each week, part of the commitment is to bring in a warm meal at night and a breakfast in the morning. Okay. We are still.
It's going up the street here right now.
Yeah that's a they're state. Still going.
That's the only city. Pioneer Hall.
Yeah. Thursday.
But it's not. I mean, we give them grant money, but now they pay to rent the space. They didn't used to.
And they're looking for another place where they could provide indoor meals during the winter. So if anyone knows of anything, we should contact Jason and Vanessa. We're planning a training, sort of an orientation on October 10th at 6:30 to 8:30 at the Methodist Church. We're still looking for two more sponsors. So Jason and Vanessa, their group, Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice, sponsored Saturday nights last year. So they're not doing that this year. They wanted to focus only on food. So we're looking for another sponsor in the community. There's some possibility that Temple Emek Shalom and the Havara will join forces and provide another night of shelter. And then there's another group called The Story that's going to come next week and look at the space. And they're a new congregation in town. They have a lot of young, very active.
Are they the ones down on B Street?
So those are two more possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We could
recruit Aaron's people.
I was thinking about it.
And that's
we need people to do more
volunteer sponsors at the East Main location shelter.
It's a single location.
Yeah. But then you just need different.
Nice. We still need volunteers, and we need people to sponsor a night. The shelter, Aura, is short of money for this endeavor. So some of the grants that came through last year are not, the access can't supply the same amount of money this year that they did last year. Mm-hmm. So they're a little bit of trouble.
We'll hear a little bit more about that, I suppose.
The shelter coordinator, is that a part-time job? Full-time job?
It's a full-time job with benefits.
Okay.
Advertising it at The Story, because they have maybe a bunch of new college grads that would maybe want more people. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be a good research for advertising.
I'll mention that more.
I always wonder why we, and maybe this isn't what's happening, but I always get the impression that we're trying to just draw volunteers from Ashland, and that I think you could draw volunteers regionally. From different church groups or other civic groups, even?
In Phoenix.
That's the thing. We've got Phoenix and Talent, and we know that our homeless population is not all from here. Mm-hmm. So it just feels like if our homeless population is regional, why couldn't our volunteers also be regional?
Right.
Well,
I don't think they turn anybody down.
No.
To get a lot of phone calls for emergency shelter from people from Medford and other places. The problem was you needed to have had a background check in order to do it, so you can't. it's hard to get that really quickly in an emergency situation. So if people think they may want to do that, they need to have the background check done.
Carry it around with
them. Yeah, right. So, but it's very exciting. I think it's going to make a huge difference to have a pre-screened population and a single location.
Huge. And easier on the volunteer team by far.
And there's a bus, and it's going to make a few runs a night to pick up people and bring them there. So
it's amazing.
It's exciting.
Yeah. It's come a long way.
Yeah.
A quick update on Rogue Retreat. We're opening year-round shelter, I think 54 to 56. I'm not sure. People year-round, November 1st. Sixth and Ivy.
Ooh, do you know where it was?
And that building has been purchased by Access. And it's, I don't know what's going on, but their budget has doubled. They must have found asbestos or something, because but it is on track to open. I'm sorry.
I'm just thinking about what is that building. Next to the theater.
It's on the corner of...
Oh, it's Old Compass House.
Compass House. And they're going across street.
Right.
And I said earlier, some of those beds will... We're working on a contract with Asante and
Providence,
and the potentially CCOs, but for discharging people they don't have a place to go.
Now your Medford people won't be coming here anymore, right?
Well,
that's where they were coming from.
Well, that's great.
That's great.
And this has, there have to be two people on duty, so the staff is growing, and the budget is going from when I started 2 years ago, it was under $1 million, and then they hit $1 million, and now it's going to be
2.8. Wow.
That's a huge number of new people served.
Yeah.
That's your budget?
Well,
operating
budget. Yeah.
A lot of different places.
I said earlier in the meeting that the county is interested in giving Rogue Retreat land that is kind of useless land, and that it meshes nicely with this relaxation of restrictions. And the tiny houses in Grants Pass is moving along. So there's a lot happening, and it seems like fast, furious.
Exciting.
I think there's a story to be told here about progress on a lot of fronts that people don't get. So I'm hoping that we can incorporate it as we go forward about how all this is happening. Which we're looking at the October. Did you all review that? The agenda.
Oh,
for
I
the
didn't
next?
Hand it out to everyone.
Oh, okay. Then I'm the only one that's looking
You're
at
special.
It.
So. You're special.
No, well, I just...
Well, you get to set the agenda, so you are special.
So the question that I have is that ORA requested that they give a winter shelter update next meeting, and with the notion that we would hold the meeting at the new winter shelter.
Oh, okay.
Now, I think we just had a great winter shelter update. My thought was that we would do it in November, but you have a different view
Aura requested that it happens in October.
Because once November comes, the residents will be coming in. Yeah.
So there's two different things, Rich.
They're coming in at 4 o'clock?
It's 6 mm-hmm. o'clock.
Yes. Oh, do they? No. So there's two different things, though. Aura requested that they come and give a presentation to the commission. They also suggested that they could do that at the winter shelter and we could hold our meeting there. We can't hold our meeting there in October because we have too many presentations that are going to require a slide presentation. And so I emailed back and I said, we can probably put you on the October agenda, but we couldn't have it there. Could we go there in November or December? And so they said, yes, we could, but we will still be on the October agenda, right?
No, that's the part that I want to talk about because I'm not sure I want that. And let me just say why.
Okay.
Is that as important as this is, it's one of the groups that we fund. I didn't want to start a precedent that a group says, we just want to come and give you guys a major update about any one of the groups could be giving us a major update. Mm-hmm. We just had a good update about what it was. So I'm less clear about having 2 months in which we have ORA scheduled to do.
Sure.
Basically, it's a PR for, I mean, it's wonderful work, but I understand why they want to do it, but I just am skeptical that why can't we just do it at one time on November? We'll get an update. It's kind of like where we're just like we just had it.
I renamed it the Winter Shelter Update. I don't think that they will talk about the Winter Shelter, but they want to come in October for a reason.
But they're not telling us what the reason is?
They want to tell us all the things that they're doing because of, well, she told us in the email. Because of the...
I wasn't involved. Don't look at me.
For the goals. Well, and this, I feel bad because Jackie felt like, she asked, should I come to this meeting? Because if you guys are going to discuss this, then I feel like I need to be here to discuss it. And I said, I don't think it needs to be discussed because Rich can make the decision as to whether the Aura can come, and if Aura is coming to give a winter shelter update, then I think the commission would be open to hearing that. So that was me saying all those things. It is, I think, a larger piece of the budget shortfall for the winter shelter and the prioritization and goal setting for this commission and the funding sources that will be offered in January. And that's why they want to come in October.
And that's bothersome to me.
It's a little bothersome
to me, because we're not offering that same thing to anybody else. I mean, if we're trying to understand the program, I like the notion of understanding the program on the winter shelter, an opportunity twice to lay out why we're doing good work and maybe we need some more money and all that stuff. If I was another program, I'd say, like, how do they get to come in? And we don't. And even while I would be happy to have them do all the things, I'm just thinking about the precedent about other and fairness for everybody.
And that's why I thought a winter shelter update is appropriate.
Okay.
Can I just play devil's advocate for a minute?
I got five minutes for me.
I feel like the shelter issue has been present at every single meeting we've had for at least the last 2 years.
Right.
So it's not exactly the same as other grantees in that it's really a critical issue for our city and for this commission mm-hmm. for a long time. So that we're finally opening it is huge. Mm-hmm. So I would just like
so
to...
So you're in favor of October and November?
Well, the November thing is just a site visit.
We don't have to hold our meeting there. We could just go. I'm sure they're going to do some open house kind of things.
Right. We don't have to do it at all. I think she was just suggesting, oh, those things.
But I would
well
like
together.
To have them come talk to us about.
Is that once or twice?
I would say once.
Once.
And then invite us to your next open house.
Right.
And
we can go there on our own. I think that people would like to see it.
So, let me go back to the so. This agenda that's out there would have a winter shelter update in it, and then the suggestion is that they invite us to an open house.
Yeah. And honestly, I didn't know that whether it would work for November or December. I'm not necessarily in favor of hosting a meeting at the winter shelter, because the structure of our meetings is that they should be open to the public and people should come. Yeah. They could come there. It's ADA accessible, but it's not in the regular location. And so right. It could
it's
be
not
confusing.
Necessary anyway.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's my feeling too.
So I see we got a consensus that they will be on the October agenda, and then we can be invited to another place, but that the November meeting would continue to be here.
Well, yeah. I mean, whenever
you
we decide.
You mean individual members could go to the open house on their own?
Yeah. Right. We're not doing it. That is separate from our meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah. We're not going in mass.
They may host an event that,
we all want to go to or something.
Well, I think to your point, I think there's a difference whether we have a regular meeting or whether we convene there, and whether 75% of us go.
Right. So we're not doing that, and we're going. What I heard everybody is we're going back to October, November here. They'll be on the October agenda. Then it's up to them to think about we could say we're interested in it. If they've got a open house or an opportunity for us to go, not as a meeting, but as counselors, then we would like that.
Okay. I had one more thing I wanted to say. Kenny Ray Price was a longtime shelter guest. He grew up here in Ashland. He attended schools here in Ashland, and he died. He got hit by a train out by Coleman Mills, and it was sad.
And there was no media coverage of it.
There was not a lie.
And it was on Facebook, and it was everywhere on the internet.
There was a memorial service last Thursday here.
He used to come up to the showers and was quite helpful in a shower repair for the old truck. So.
Yeah. Now he had recently become housed. So I don't know how all the events transpired that he ended up on the railroad tracks. But
there was just an article today about the dangers of trains, and I wondered why there wasn't one before, because the train service just picked up here recently, and it had we haven't had trains for years.
Anyway, he was one of the more relatable people who were unhoused in our community.
How long had he been?
His whole life.
How long had he been homeless?
He's been homeless off and on for many years. He's been coming.
Because 10 years ago at our reunion, he was not homeless.
Yeah. And I know he has kids.
Yeah, he was married.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. I'm looking at right at 6 o'clock.
All right.
And so if it's all right, we're going to adjourn. Yeah. And thank everybody. And we'll be back here on October with an interesting agenda.
The Jackson County Homelessness Task Force on their agenda is to meet at the Ashland Community Center in December.
And so I need to talk with Christine about that. Anna D'Amato, who's on the Continuum Care Board, has suggested that we could